if you can't see the noise or if you can't see the artifact, why should that be taken into consideration when we calculate quality? Because you can't see it. So this is very important to incorporate so that we get an accurate measure of quality. There was, you know, Delta E, there was an extension of this that has been quite popular. It's quite well used. So Delta EIB, if you do it per pixel, doesn't correlate with perceived difference. So Sang and Vandel, they made an extension of this. And what they were trying to do was, we want to incorporate this aspect into the metric. That made a lot of sense. Right, we have this metric that doesn't account for this. We want to account for the fact of how we see things. So they did this, and the way that they did it was, you have your image, you go to a color space, which is this first box that I showed earlier, color space transform. Here they use the 01, 02, 03 color space, which is an opponent color space, where you have luminance, red, green, blue, yellow. And this luminance, red, green, blue, yellow, that corresponds to these, right? So there needs to be a match between the color space that your data is in and where your contrast sensitivity curves are. So that made sense. They apply this filter, and then they calculate color difference afterwards. You could say, oh, the idea is not that novel, but it actually makes a lot of sense to do it like this. This is actually the CSFs that they use. It's not so important. You can go online. You can try this. The code is available. You can test it in MATLAB. I've done that because I like to use examples to show. So this is in the example code of SCLab. You have these two images. That's here. One thing that is very important when we do this is to define the viewing conditions. So right here, it's defined two different viewing distances. And I think that you could imagine why it's important to say something about the distance. So if you are driving, for example, you see, oh, there is a sign coming, but I can't read what's on the sign. But as you get closer, you can see what's on the sign, right? So distance is important in terms of what we can perceive and see. So if I view this image from a very long distance apart, I can't see all the fine details. So that's invisible to me. If I'm very close, I can see it, so I should take it into account. So we define these two viewing distances. I think it's 18 and 54 and a half inch. And then we run this. And then you would get something like this. So this is the quality maps. This tells you the color difference or the image difference per pixel. And then we see something in these two. So what's the observation that we see? This is close, this is further apart. What do you observe? This one looks a little bit blurred, right? A little bit kind of. And that makes sense. Because if you view something at a further distance, the image looks more blurred. You don't see the individual differences, the details in this. So if I'm not going to say evaluate and say, oh, it works perfectly, but this is what I would expect. The closer you get, the more individual pixels you will see. The further away you get, the more and more blurred it will be. And that's kind of showing that, yes, there is the filter that's built into SCLab kind of works. Yeah?
When you compare them, the points for RRED, which is like the highest difference, they kind of move. So how can we explain that? Like, you see there is one on the first pad,
So basically what I would say here is that that red point is probably something that is visible at a close distance. When you move further away, you don't see it. It's being kind of blurred with all the others. And then it's actually taken away because it moves outside and it's not visible anymore. Because it might just be one single point. That would be my initial kind of guess of why this happens and why you would see it like this. There is also another version, it's spatial delta EE. It's actually doing exactly the same, just with another color difference. Then I think that it's time for a break.
Okay.
Isn't that right? It's 2?
Yeah. And, 15 minutes. Regathering, then 4:00.
Yep. Thank you. how was the lecture earlier today with David? Was it good?
Yeah.
It was more on material appearance, right?
Is there any correlation between appearance and quality?
Yeah, I think there is quite a strong link between those as well, because you could, what I'm talking about here is kind of two images, but if you start going into aspects like 3D printing, you also need to think about the appearance and having things to look right, and if you want things to match, right? And you need to go beyond and look at other types of attributes as well. So it's not just about getting the color to match, but you also need to get the gloss or texture to match. And then the question is, okay, how do you also image that to actually get those aspects? Because gloss, if it does measure from one angle, it might not be enough. So it becomes a bit more complex. And you cannot use that diffuse lighting, for example. So, but I think there is a very strong link between those.
So, if I have this topic of quality, or like a quality measurements for images, kind of fascinating. So I kind of want to do like a literature review on this.
Yeah.
But I don't really know exactly what direction I would go in. Like, what would I look up?
I think maybe a starting point would be the survey of image quality that I published with John. Because that's a survey, right? It's trying to do this overview. And then that could be, there is also a very good paper by Damien Chandler called Seven Challenges in Image Quality. And he lists like what are the challenges in image quality, and a survey, if you want to do something, could be, has there been any advances in those seven challenges, or one of those challenges that he identified 10 years ago?
Yeah.
And then you could pick one of them, or two of them, or something like this, and just say, what have people done in this field, or this area, from when he identified that this is a big problem?
Yeah. Just write the names. What did you say his name was?
Damon?
Just pretending that you don't know what
Chandler. Chandler.
Yeah, it was like seven
challenges in image quality assessment, I think it's called. Past, present, and future, or something like that.
Yeah, that's a really good start.
And part of the things that he's saying is these. When we measure contrast sensitivity like this, we measure it always in targets like this.
Yeah.
But these are, and we apply the quality metric to natural images.
Yeah.
So can we measure in these and just directly apply it to a natural image? And you totally lack the content perspective.
Yeah.
And how content impacts. Because in these, there is no impact of content, because they're just targets.
Yeah, I can imagine that for faces, we're probably better at finding certain frequencies than like breasts.
Yeah, and also that the content could mask or hide distortions that we don't see.
Yeah.
So if you have high frequency content, it's kind of masking the distortion that is there and we don't see it. Here you don't have any of that because it's just a test target without any of the content that we see in images.
Yeah.
And most of these metrics, they don't really care about the content. They are content independent.
Yeah.
But we know that content impacts a lot. Another challenge that he's mentioning is something which is really simple for us, it's geometric distortions.
Yeah.
Because these are pixel based, but if you just take your original and then you have your reproduction and you just rotate a little bit,
yeah,
all the metrics fade.
Yeah, like all the pixels are like that.
If you just shifted one pixel to the left or to the right, all the metrics have a big problem.
Yeah.
But we don't care about one pixel shift.
Yeah.
But these pixel-based metrics, they do that. So how do we actually generate or make metrics that's more robust to geometric changes?
Yeah. Wouldn't it be like,
the first of
you think there would be like some kind of convolutional solution to this?
Yeah, but you could also see that in cameras you have many different optical distortions as well.
Yeah,
would warp it and things like this. So it's, it can be a bit challenging. But of course there are metrics that's better at being independent of this. But then usually you introduce some other error and problem as well. So I think that's a very good starting point looking in the Damon Chandler paper.
Yeah.
Don't be scared by the fact that it's very long, some of it is a bit complex. But if you just look at the main aspects, you kind of get an idea, and there's a lot of references in the paper as well.
Yeah.
So I would suggest that as a good starting point.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. I guess we are everyone here, more or less, at least. I realize that I have a lot of slides and I haven't had the pace that I was expecting, but it might not be a problem if we are not able to go through all the slides. It's better to kind of give an overview of some of these things. We also have some of these high-level base metrics, and they are better at, or the goal is to try and use information about how we can extract like structure in the image. We are very good at being able to detect these things. So we're basically built on extracting structure and see patterns. A very well-known metric is the Structural Similarity Index, SSIM. I think some of you might have heard about this and used it maybe also. But this is based on a slightly different approach. And it basically says that what we are doing is that we are checking luminance. We do a comparison of that. We do a comparison of contrast. And if you take away the luminance and contrast in your image, what you're left with is the structure. And we compare the structure as well. And then we combine these into a similarity measure. And if you have changes in the structure in your image, or you introduce new structure, you have a loss of quality. And this has been extremely popular. It's been used a lot. I think now it's the most cited paper in image processing. So it's really gone far and wide and been adapted in many different applications. But there's no color here, right? It's only grayscale.
Remember that perhaps first week of December?
Yeah. So that's a tip for the exam, right? This is the math. That's not so important. What it does is it's actually like a sliding window. It goes through and it compares for that sliding window for every single picture. If you want to test it, the code is online. You can go there, you can download. It's quite simple to run. You need two images. They should be the same size, the same version. And then it will give you an output, which is a number between 0 and 1, that tells you how similar these two images are. You can change some parameters if you like. In this case, I've done RGB to gray because it doesn't work with RGB images. It only works with gray images. And then you will get something like this. Right? This is a quality map. One means that the images are identical, or this pixel, that region is identical. And then you have the quality going down. This is the same image as I showed you before, the hats, right? So you can see here that, okay, the dark red regions, that's the closest similarity to the original, and the blue parts are where there is the biggest difference. And whether this is right or wrong, okay, that's basically up for evaluation and see.
You recognize the four hats from yesterday?
There's also a lot of other approaches that can be used, that is out there. I will not go through them. I did with John in 2012 a large survey. You will find, if you go to the paper, there's like a long list of like 120 metrics all classified and organized. To be honest, it was boring reading that many papers and trying to classify them, but it was very useful to do it. I talked about pooling earlier. What I didn't say at that point is that we actually have three different types of pooling. So what I talked about was mostly the spatial pooling, which is what we see here. That's where we have a quality map. We go to one number. But we could also have cases where we have channel pooling. Let's say that we have a quality map for L in C-Lab, for A and for the B channel. And then we want to merge these. So we can do channel pooling, where we try to merge those three channels into one. Or we can have cases where we have a quality metric to measure sharpness, we have a quality metric to measure contrast, and one to measure color, and we would like to merge those. And that's where we can do quality attribute pooling. And then the strategy for these could be different, right? So it's very different to merge sharpness and contrast versus L A and B channels. There is actually a general form of thinking about spatial pooling. What is important here is that we have two ways of doing pooling. One is quality based. We only use the quality values in the quality map for pooling. So let's say low quality values should be given a higher weight compared to high quality values. Content-based pooling is where we use the content of the image. Like a face should be given higher weight, background less weight. So this is basically how do you determine the weight that you apply, whether that's based on the quality map itself or the content. I think there is an example here. I will not go through these, but I will show you this. Which was done by a student. We looked at if we change parameters or if we have different types of metrics and we look at the parameters for these pooling methods, what we see is that the parameter is important. That's obvious that the parameter is important. What we also found is that it's metric dependent. So a pooling method that works well for one metric doesn't necessarily work well for the other metrics. So just because it works well for SSIM doesn't mean it works well for SCLab. So you actually need to test and see what is actually the most suitable pooling technique for your metric. So you can't just rely on what other people have done, you actually need to test it. This was work that I did with, you don't know David. He was a COSI student. He finished September. He was here. Yeah. So we did this paper. This was the color imaging course. I think he did this work. And we worked on pooling. And what we wanted to, what he wanted to do was, let's take these pooling techniques and let's evaluate them and see how well they work. So what he did was he took all of these, he implemented these, and he tested this on the, this is on the CIDIQ dataset, I think. And you can see simple things like, okay, what happens if you take the mean, the maximum, minimum, Q1 median, and so on. And then we have a bit more of these advanced quality based ones. And then, in 2014, with a CIMET student, I did a study in the color imaging with Cherinet, and he proposed the five-number summary. And then what David also did was he tested different version of that to see if it works. And what you could see here is that, yes, it is dependent on the pooling technique. This, I believe, is the result for SSIM. So you should not use the maximum. That's a very bad decision. Yeah, so there is not, for some of these, the thing that we see with the five-number summary as well is that it doesn't really depend that much on which five numbers you use. And that's also because this is basically an average of five numbers. So if you replace one of them, it doesn't have that much of an impact. But this is, I think this is a very good example of potential things that could be investigated in courses here or in projects. And I'm very happy to see that we actually managed to do this. Because there's very few papers who actually even mention pooling. As I said, there's usually one sentence in the paper. They could spend 15 pages explaining all they've done, and then there's one sentence on pooling. So actually getting some focus on this, I think it's good. That was the first part I had. I also have the second part. Let's say now that we have these quality metrics. You know how to design a metric. Color space transform, human visual system, quality calculations, pooling, quality value. So now you could go out, you could design your own metric, and then the question that I'm having is, how do we know that the metric is working? It's not a problem to design a metric, I can do that all day long, but it might not work. And that's where we need evaluation, right? So we need to have an experiment that's set up, where we have a set of images, and we ask people to rate them. This is where you can do peer comparison experiments or category judgment. I don't know. Do you know these techniques? Yeah, I see some nodding at least. So we get these results from the observers. They say that the quality of this image is this. And then what we are doing is that we are calculating for the same images the quality metric and the value. And then this is the basis that we have. We compare the result of the metric to the result of the observers, which is what I'm trying to illustrate here. We have our images, we have our observer scores, and we have our metric scores, and then we do correlation. Normally, this is what is done. And then you look at the correlation between these two variables that you have. And then if you get a correlation of one, you're very happy, it works, it's perfect, your metric is good. I don't know how much statistics you have had, but correlation might not be the best way right? There are some limitations to this. But what we are doing, just to explain that, is we take two images of an image set. Observer says 0.5. Our metric says 1. Okay, we plot that there. And we do this for all the images, right? And then we calculate the correlation. And then you could get here, we have a high correlation of 0.94, which means that the metric is saying the same as the observers. And that's what we want to have. You can also calculate the confidence interval around this correlation value. I will not spend time on that. You can also do a Spearman rank order correlation, where you just look at the ranks to see if it's being ranked the same. This is an example. This is from Wikipedia, but it shows Pearson correlation versus Spearman. Here, the rank between X and Y is perfect. It's being ranked exactly in the same order, but the Pearson correlation is not linear directly. It's not a perfect correlation. And if you see here, it's not even necessarily linear. So sometimes we need to go to a non-linear case, because the metric I have might not be linear. I could also say that the observers might not be linear either, because they might not have used the scale in a linear way. So you might be in a case where the observers have rated things non-linearly and the metric is non-linear. And then the relationship between these, we cannot expect to be linear. Of course, non-linearity in both could cancel out, but very often that's not the case. So what people would do is that they would try to fit a non-linear thing to this and then calculate correlation. There is this 5-point function that is very commonly used. But this is where you also need to be careful, because you can overfit. It could be kind of fitted too much to this. I think I will do one more case of this, which I think is... So this is the same type of plot that you have there. And if I do does my metric work? So do you have a metric that is good, that works? If you did correlation on this, you would probably get something like this.
You don't have enough test information, but you didn't check the middle
values. So if I just did, if you were, I'm not going to say lazy, but if you go to MATLAB and then you write core between A and B, or X and C, this could give you a 0.99. And then I could be very happy. My metric works. 0.99 is perfect. If you look at this, if I remove this point, this correlation would probably be close to zero, right? And then you could say, no, it doesn't work. But I think there is some more insight to this, because from this, I can actually draw another conclusion about my metric and how it works. The fact is that my metric is able to separate large differences, but small differences is not able to do, to cope with. This is a large difference, right? The mean opinion score here is very large. But when you come to smaller differences, my metric is not working. That's the other thing I can draw from this. And then, this number doesn't tell you anything about that. So sometimes it's very useful to look at this plot and how it would be. I know that this is in an extreme case, right? And then if I I had something like this.
This is the metric, this is the mean opinion score.
Probably not that good.
Maybe you could apply normalization to this.
And then I could tell you that this is image one, this is image two. It's two different images. And then it looks quite different. Here, this correlation is very good. And this correlation is very good. So this, if this was the plot that I had, and I only calculated the correlation, it might be low. If I went in and I analyzed a bit more, I could see that, oh, this metric is actually having some differences due to the content of these images. It's actually the image that makes the difference. The metric is not bad, it works. It's just that it's not able to separate between the content of A and, or content of 1 and content of 2. But maybe we as observers could do that, or we are able to do separate in some sense. You can also see that observers here rate one low and one higher in that sense. So. Yeah. Maybe the take-home message there is don't just trust the number you get out from MATLAB. Do like the two-second thing to do the plot to investigate. The same if you do pooling, don't just trust the number that comes out. Visualize also the quality map. It will take you 1 second to do. And you very easily can see if there's something wrong or not. Okay. So I'll show an, I think this is an example. If you want to evaluate your quality metric, you need a database. Or you need to gather data yourself. Gathering data takes a lot of time. Everyone who has done this ever knows that it takes a really long time to gather a lot of quality scores. So there are some existing databases, we can pick some of them. CIDIQ here, that was done here in Jøvik. The TID databases, those are from Tampere in Finland. Very well known, a lot used. And then you have others as well. One thing that you might notice here is number of reference images. It's around, I don't know, 10 to 20. Then you could ask, is that enough content? Is it diverse enough to have 20 images? Does that cover all possible content aspects that we have? What if we go to number of distortions? Like 2, 10, 24, 17, and how many levels? And then, okay, how many observers do we actually need? 42. How many people would you add to an experiment if you were running it? I know it's a trick question. a lot of recommendations say at least 15. 15, 1-5. But then you look here, like 985. So exactly what is the best number, that's difficult to say, right? And this is for overall image quality, but if we try to do some experiments with medical doctors, there's no way I can find 985 medical doctors to do my experiment. You're lucky if you have like 4 or 5. So, okay, we have these. In this example, I have picked 6. I picked 22 metrics, and I use correlation. And this is the results I get. So what we have is, we have different metrics here. delta AB, Sheamus, Sila, Pearson, R, SSIM. Color indicate different, I should have blocked teams before I started. We have correlation here, color is different databases. And if you look at this for the different databases, there's not one metric that performs well in all of them. Like, otherwise one of them would be very high. We also see that there is some images, like the yellow one, this database, the gamut mapped images from Dugai, it's very low for all of them. I don't know, do you know about gamut mapping? You heard about it? Some of the things that we see here is that if you take the green there, this was a database that I made during my master thesis, and I only changed luminance in the images. Simple change, not very complex. The metrics have a tendency of working well. The gamut mapped images is where you do gamut mapping from a large gamut to a small gamut, and you would change the colors, right? You would have lots of details, you have lots of color, saturation, you could have U-shifts. There's a lot of things happening together. And the evaluation here shows that if you have multiple things happening together, it's very difficult for the metric to be able to find out what is the most important. When you looked at those images, you would probably know that in this image, clearly it's the U-shift is very annoying. Or in this image, I lost all the details. But the metric is not able to do that in a good way, or any of these. Basically. So that's the metrics perform better for simple single distortions, and they don't perform well for complex multiple distortions. And then you could also say that, yeah, that's also logical. So I will also show another evaluation, which is on the CID IQ. Here I used 60 different quality metrics and evaluated them. What is special with the CID IQ dataset is that the experiment was done at two distances, 50 centimeter and 1 meter. And the results are different because we see different things. And this you know now based on the things that we talked about in the last hour. So these are the results. I don't expect you to know all the metrics, but you have correlation up here, higher is better, and you have these different types of metrics. And then you see that there is a difference. Some of them work better than others. And then, of course, it's interesting to try and go in and find out why. Why is this metric working well? So why is the WSSI metric high? There are some of the metrics here that we have made here locally in Gjøvik as well. So these metrics are made here. They don't work well. Shame is made here. It doesn't work that well. These are my metrics. They don't work well either. So it's not really looking good for me and my work. But this is one database and one data set. And then one of the things that people are looking for is, in image quality, you could say that the holy grail is, let's find one metric to measure everything. That's what people would like. To some extent, that's what we have been trying to do here. I don't believe that. I don't believe we can find one metric that measures everything. Because image quality is very complex. We have different applications. So what I believe in, and that I have been believing in for a long time, is we need to divide it down into smaller problems. And we can measure the smaller problems. And the approach that we took on this was, okay, overall quality, let's divide that into what we call quality attributes. And a quality attribute is what we could say is a terms of perception: sharpness, contrast, color. But I'll give an example of how we did that. This was during my PhD. I worked with OSEA, now bought by Cavill, and I was looking at quality assessment of printing things. So these are some of the terms that people in the industry use to describe quality of printing. And you can search lightness, sharpness, blur, contrast, contouring, noise, blur, and then you are out of breath after 1 mile. And then when I realized this, because I went around, I talked to printing experts, they told me this. And then I'm kind of thinking, I can't measure all of these. But when I started to look at this, sharpness and blur are similar, right? So instead of measuring all of them, maybe I can find a meaningful set of attributes I can use. So if I can reduce these hundreds of attributes that I found that people use into something that's smaller and manageable, maybe I can measure those smaller parts. So this is what we did. We actually suggested 6. Color. Everything that has to do with color, hue, saturation, and so on, is grouped in that. Lightness. We decided to separate that because it's so important. We are more sensitive to the achromatic information that you also saw in the contrast sensitivity. Contrast is very important. And this is important both globally and locally. And it's also important in lightness and chromaticity. Sharpness. Of course, things need to be sharp, otherwise we don't like it. And we don't want artifacts to pop up. And then we also have an attribute that's linked to the physical, right? Gloss of the paper, the paper properties, and so on. When we finished doing this for printing, we also noticed that, come on, if you look at all of this, this would work in almost any application. If I wanted to measure the quality of this display, this projector, I could look at color, lightness, contrast, sharpness, artifacts, and there will be a physical aspect as well. These attributes are not just for printing. They would work in mostly any setting. That wasn't the intention when we started, but we saw that afterwards. So, we have these 6 dimensions. They're much smaller than 100. Some of them are artifactual. So if you see this, the quality will always go down. If you add more and more artifacts, the quality will always go down. But some of them are preferential, which means that if I have, I could say quality here, and let's put sharpness on that axis. If the image is blurred and not sharp at all, you don't like the quality. As it becomes sharper, you will like it more and more. At some point, you would say, oh, this looks very good, but if you sharpen more, I don't like it. Right? So you have a preference point, you have an optimal point in this. If I were to say that, oh, let's say blocking artifacts in compression, 0 blocking artifacts, best quality. The more blocking artifacts I get, the lower the quality will be, right? That's artifactual. So you need to deal with the fact that you have these 2 types of attributes and they're different. And then, when we have all of these attributes, we need to find a metric for them. So what we did was, going through these attributes, and in sharpness, for example, what's important when we measure sharpness? When you look at sharpness, you judge that, you will look at edges, right? And you will look at how much detail you see. Okay, so if those are the 2 important aspects about sharpness, I need a metric that is able to look at edges and measure the amount of details. So let's find a metric that's able to do that. If I want to measure color, I need a color difference metric or something like this, because I need to measure color. I cannot apply SSIM to measure color. That wouldn't work. So you can go through and you can find suitable metrics for this. And then we come to this point of, since this was done in an industry setting, it's not just giving a number. It's also being able to convey the results that you get. So we need to visualize. We need to use a way of giving information to the user about what are the results. How do you use these quality values? I'm not an expert in visualization, but we decided to use something that's called a spider plot. It's also known as radar charts, web charts, polar chart, Kvyat diagrams. It probably has a bunch of other names as well. And mostly when I tell people, oh, we use a spider plot, and I'm like, spider plot? What's that? And then when they show the spider plot, does anyone know what a spider plot is? It's this. And yeah, of course, yeah, that's it. What we wanted was to give them a visual representation about the quality if you compare three different printers in five images. Here, this, I think if I remember correctly, is measuring sharpness. So if you have a specific application or in printing in this case, you're printing, let's say, schematics, drawings, where details are important, I would probably go with printer C, because that gives me higher sharpness compared to the two other printers. We also had, I will not go through that, but we also had cases where we had differences, so we needed to invert it. But this is for color, I think it's color accuracy. Comparison of four different printers. And I would say that, okay, if you want to buy a printer and color accuracy is very important to you, you should not buy printer C. Right? The thing is, printer C could be very good, but it's just not that good at being able to do accurate color reproduction. If color is very important, okay, printer D is probably the one that you want to have. And you can also see that there is some difference in terms of content and the images that you have. This was actually a tool that was developed. You could click on the image, and then you got the image quality maps up and things like this. So you could go in and you could look at the maps if you wanted. So we use this to evaluate the printing workflow. So we use these attributes to evaluate. Most of you know Ali, of course. So he did this work with me in 2010 when he was basically doing his internship here. So that was during my PhD, and we wanted to have a workflow where we want to, if you have this printed image, how can we apply a quality metric to that? Because we have an original, and then we have this physical printed one. And I can't apply a metric to that physical printed image. So we came up with a workflow of doing this. We would print them, we scan them, we did some registration before we calculate the metrics. And then you will probably learn, if you haven't learned already, that when we do this, we introduce errors, right? So what are the errors that we introduce? What are the problems that we introduce to this? So, for the scanning process, let's say that, oh, I compare five printers. I scan them on five different scanners. Would that be a wise idea? So why is that not a wise idea?
Because each scanner is in a device, and it goes through all these physical processing, and then there is the signal that it has to go through profiling, and that if you want it, compare things, at least use the same scanner with the same profile.
Yeah. Which is basically what we did, right? Okay, use the same scanner because you know that you will introduce the same error to all the images. If you use two different scanners, just as a example, let's say that one of the scanners added a U-shift towards red and the other one towards green. It goes in two different directions, right? But if you use the same scanner and they all move towards red, you will have the same shift in all the images, right? And if you compare one to the other, then it's probably not that important that you have this shift because it's equal. So use the same scanner. Make sure that you do a calibration and characterization of the devices that you have. And then we also did this registration, because when you scan these images, you scan them at a very high resolution. But for the full reference metrics we applied, the original and the reproduction needs to have the same resolution, the same size. So we actually needed to do a registration, and also to correct if we put it a little bit skewed into the scanner, right? Getting it completely straight is very, very difficult. So we had some registration marks to do that. And then we visualized the results in the end. So these are the four printers we had. So low end and a little bit higher end, a 12-channel inkjet plotter with different types of papers as well. And theoretically, if you look at this, the coated paper should actually give you better results compared to copy paper. And I would guess that the 12-channel inkjet plotter that we had should give better results than the low-end CMYK inkjet printer. So this is one of the results that we had. This is sharpness. And I'm not very surprised the fact that the 12-channel inkjet plotter actually gives very good results on higher quality paper as well. But we see that printer C here also has some problems in some images. This is noise in this, which is also not so surprising that printer A on copy paper, low end, has more noise in half toning than a 12-channel inkjet plotter, right? It's also natural. So it's kind of verifying that it seems to work in a nice way. This was color. Still, the 12 ink one gives better color reproduction. I guess I have 7 minutes. This is some work that's actually being done now. This evaluation of 2.5D printing. So the 2.5D printing is you print with an elevation up to a millimeter. So this work is done by Altinai, a PhD student who's in the APEARS project. She just handed in her PhD thesis. So this is she'll probably defend at the end of the year. So what she's doing is very similar to what I did for 2D printing. We have some prints. Then we need to capture those. But since this is 2.5D, we can't put it in the scanner because it has a surface elevation, right? So we need to capture the surface elevation as well. So she tested two different setups, a single shot and a multi-shot setup with a camera. We need to do some post-processing in order to image registration and things like this. We apply some metrics. And we analyze and see if it works. So the question we had was, can we use image quality metrics for 2.5D printing? Now I'm summarizing her PhD thesis more into like two slides. So it's. But what we did is a single shot setup is just one camera, you take one picture. The multi-shot setup is RTI, where you move samples around. So it's just multiple images. In this test image here, most of the difference and the quality things actually happen in, these are tiles where you have this grout line, and in those lines, that's where the error occurs. That's where the quality problems are. And we can see that the multi-shot setup that we did is much better at being able to detect these. So what we found is that, you cannot just use a single image, or it might help you a little bit, but to get the whole aspect, since this is an elevation, you actually need to have multiple captures from different angles to pick up on that. And we found that some of the metrics are actually, yes, they can work. They are responsive. This is what I mentioned in terms of using a projector to do quality assessment as well. This was Ping, also a PhD student here. He followed the same type of framework. Camera, projector, screen. You place the camera, you take a picture, you analyze whether you can use quality metrics. And this is correlation for some of them for sharpness. Using the same principle, let's take a quality attribute. Instead of a scanner, we have a camera. Instead of a print, we have a display. Works very well. This is the case where we had biometric quality that I mentioned that, okay, can you check this before you enroll it to the system? This was done by Chin Wei, and he showed that, yes, quality metrics are useful, and you can use them in a good way, but it helps a lot if you are training them on that application. So they need to be specifically for that. We did the same for Iris as well. You do some quality filtering before, and if the quality is good enough, you send it to the segmentation in the biometric system. I also work quite a lot on video capsule endoscopy. This pill you swallow, it takes pictures through the digestive system. And what we wanted to see is, can we use image quality metrics to say something about the quality of these images in terms of diagnostic quality? I don't think there is a slide showing the results. What we did find is that there are some no reference metrics that are linked to diagnostic quality. So by using a quality metric from with these images, we can actually say something about how good the quality would be. This is some work I did with a postdoc here on MRI. So using no reference metrics and using information about the statistical properties of MRI images to say something about the quality. I think that was the last slide I had. And also, I did stick to time this time.
Very good.
Questions? I'm sorry, there was too many slides for having a good interaction, but I do appreciate the comments and feedback and things during the lecture. That's also very good to have a dialogue and a discussion.
I just have one simple question. I would like to know which is the best form of, you know, assessing the image quality. Is it computation or experiment?
No, the gold standard, I would say, is subjective experiments. Yeah, a well-defined set of subjective experiment, that is the gold standard. And that's what all these quality metrics try to accomplish, is to predict the same that we would get in a subjective experiment. But in some cases, it's very difficult to do those subjective experiments because they are time-consuming. It takes a lot of time to set up, and you need to carefully control them in order to know that you get exactly what you want. And having a lot of people in the lab, it's nice, but it is very consuming.
But during the subjective experiments, what would be data, getting the data?
Well, once more.
I mean, data, getting data.
I guess there's a lot of challenges in subjective assessment. In terms of, okay, you need to screen your observers to make sure that they are correct. You need to make sure that they understand the task they're actually doing. There was a very nice talk at the CVCS conference by Simon Delpine, where he actually showed that... I find this fascinating and interesting. What he showed from his analysis was, if this is the number of trials that you have, the number of images you see, and this is your mean opinion score, when you start to rate, you start up here, and at a certain number of trials, you become more strict. So the conclusion that Simon said during the talk he had was, if you're developing a new algorithm, make sure to put your algorithm in the first 50 trials of your experiment, and people are more kind to you. If you put it towards the end, they're more strict. So this impacts, right, how you design your experiment. I'm not sure if it really answers. There's a lot of complexity in this. But I find it really fascinating to look into this and how it impacts. I will upload, I gave the slides to Peter. I will also make sure that we upload the video so that you have it if you would like to watch it. You're more than welcome to drop by my office at any time, 8208, if you would like to discuss anything on quality.
Okay, I listen. Okay. Marius is still talking.
Okay. Yeah. Do you want to say the final words?
No, you did. Yes, Marius, thanks a lot for this introduction. Again, it's a huge topic. Huge potential to do more research or just look into a specific area and see what other people has done.
I guess what we didn't say is that the things that I presented now in like 2 hours, that used to be an entire course here. So I had one course just on image quality that was running through an entire semester. So, of course, the detail we could go into in that course, because, okay, I think it was 7.5 credits, only on image quality.
Yeah.
Right now, I've been kind of given 2 hours. But I still like the topic, right? And there's a lot that could be done within this, both in this course and in other courses, if someone's interested. Yeah?
Okay, next week we go to hyperspectral multispectral. We will talk about translucency and appearance, so addressing a kind of other attributes than color. And there will be a lecture on what is called common color appearance, and very important actually. Some insights related to psychophysical experiments on the controlled versus non-controlled viewing conditions. So that you get a kind of an idea also in terms of your experiment pros and cons with setting up an